Good morning again. Good to be with you. Also good, as far as I'm concerned, that Unitarian Universalism has the privilege and the responsibility of drawing from many different spiritual traditions. Six of these, called our six sources, are explicitly named. They're in the front of your hymnal if you care to look them all up, or you can find them online. But we're going to focus on one today, and that is the sixth source, which was actually added a little bit after the other five. And it is spiritual teachings of earth-centered traditions, which celebrate the sacred circle of life and instruct us to live in harmony with the rhythms of nature. So earth-centered traditions, often Aboriginal peoples, Native Americans on this continent, celebrating the sacred circle of life and living in harmony with the rhythms of nature. Now, it doesn't take more than a glance at the evening news or sometimes at the trash strewn along the roadways in our cities and towns to know how far so-called advanced cultures have come from that ethic and strayed from that harmony, both socially and environmentally. And so it's important as we face challenges of environmental and social nature to look at how we might help restore that ethic, how we might mend the sacred circles. And I want to enter this in two ways. First, very quickly, I want to just contrast what I might call circle cultures with ladder cultures. I guess I'll take the latter first, which would not be taking the latter, right? That wasn't written down. That was just, you know, one of those things. So, hey, cut me some slack. Just a little. So a latter culture, we envision, you know, it's in biblical lore, we have Jacob's ladder, right? It's become a fairly common cultural reference point. The ladder seen in a dream of Jacob ascending to heaven, right, on this mystical ladder. But it has also a sort of a symbolic resonance in our environmental and our economic system, right? The American dream often entails climbing the ladder, right? And there's certain value to that. But think of a ladder culture that emphasizes the ladder. Well, ladders are basically what? Wobbly. Sometimes, inherently narrow, not a lot of room for a lot of people on a ladder. If you're up, you could fall down. If you're below, you could often get dumped on with the waste products of those above you. This seems to be our modern Western culture, does it not? The individual first and foremost, and sometimes only. Climbing the ladder to success and not really too concerned about what's below us. Okay, so then there's what we might call more of a native culture's a circle culture. And there the natives are not, native Aboriginal peoples are not the only ones to emphasize this. You find this more in social democratic countries like Sweden and most of Scandinavia and other things that are moving toward that, where the circle of all of us, the commonwealth, as I've said before, is more important, or at least as important, as the ladder of individual achievement. So in a circle, as opposed to a ladder where you're either looking up at someone or down on someone, as in a circle, what do you see? You're looking not up or down, but around, literally and figuratively, around and around. It's essentially a more egalitarian stance, is it not? So, and in that circle, do we see someone's top of their heads or something else that we'd rather maybe not see so well? What do we see? Each other's faces. We face each other, we commune with each other, we tend to care about people we look in their eyes more. And another great thing about the circle, there's almost always room for one more. If you're in a circle singing a song and somebody comes late, you don't have to get off the ladder and make room and all that, right? You just open it up and Join hands again, and there you are. It's a beautiful thing, the circle. So now, again, both are necessary in life. It's a human life. We have to strive for certain things. Nature has its hierarchies, all of that. But the question is, what is the emphasis? What is the emphasis of our society? Are we strictly a ladder society, or are we a circle society? And if we want to be more of a circle and we're more of a ladder, how can we move into that? And this brings me to the second way I want to get into mending sacred circles, which is by slicing and dicing, or at least separating, a sacred circle into four concentric sacred circles. And I'm going to cover each one of these in turn. I'll name them first. The innermost would be the internal. This is our own psyche and spirit, the individual. The second concentric circle around that is what I'll call the inner circle or the family circle. So even though it's not the individual or the interior circle, it's still our inner circle, our closest associates, family, friends. Outside of that is the communal circle. This could be our congregation. It could be the community. It could be a neighborhood. And it could go to towns and cities and up to the nation, let's say, our community, our nation, our communal circles. And then beyond that, even our, of course, international, but also the planetary circle. And I'm actually going to call that the planetary sphere because a planet is a circle in 3D, right? Great. It contains all the dimensions of the others. So, taking it one in turn briefly, if we talk about mending the sacred circles, how do we mend the sacred circles of our interior? Because this is where it starts. We talked about this when we talked a couple weeks ago about sacred activism, where being active in the world, to be a sacred activist means you're not out there blaming and shaming and totally shaking your fists all the time. You've done your inner work so that you're centered enough and clear enough in yourself and your values and your compassion for another that even when you're fighting somebody's position, you're not demonizing the person who holds it. Okay? And that takes some inner work, as I say. I'm not going to go into that deeply today, but I do want to refer you back to a talk I gave in February. I think it was February 5th, called The Mind. The book is called The Mind-Body Code, and How to Change the Beliefs That Limit Your Health, Longevity, and Success by Dr. Mario Martinez. And he describes how our early authority figures, teachers, parents, coaches, others, who play central roles in molding our self-concept when we're kids, mostly mean well. But just because of our own histories and ignorance, they often try to protect and guide us in ways that what he calls are unwittingly use the language of shame, abandonment, and betrayal. So in trying to guide us and socialize us, they also wound us, or many of us, and to different degrees. And so he calls these archetypal wounds because they're cross-cultural. They're found in everywhere, every universally across cultures. And the way their symptoms show up are also very common. So across cultures, abandonment tends to show up in a certain way. Betrayal shows up in a certain way later in life. And it's important to heal these as much as possible. And when I say heal, I don't mean that we get like if you break an arm or something, you might still have a lump, and it might be tender your whole life. And if somebody comes up and accidentally bumps that lump, you might say, "Ay, that still hurts." But that doesn't mean that we walk around banging our own lumps all the time and saying, "Wow, this really hurts. This is my life, just being in pain." Or that, in other words, what I'm trying to say is that we might not heal our wounds completely, but we deal with them. We learn to desensitize. We learn to not react, get sucked into them, okay? And because a wound is a state, according to Dr. Martinez, of helplessness, and a healing is a return to power. It's a return to the personal power that we were born with, the power of our identity, the power of our confidence, the power of our passions, the power of our purpose. And so we want to get clear of the wounds so that we're not projecting them onto others, but also so that they're not debilitating us. This is mending the inner circle, or the internal circle. That's the essence of it. And again, if you want to revisit that talk, which I actually gave on February 5th, it has an exercise in it that begins to talk about Dr. Martinez's methodology, like a meditative way to enter into that and start to heal that. Because one of the important things he says is, We can't heal the cellular level, the things that got into our bodies so deeply as kids. We can't heal them intellectually. We can talk ourselves new talk, and that doesn't hurt. But to really get into the deep wound healing, we need to go back into our bodies. And it gives us a process for that, which is really can be very helpful. So moving on to the second circle. Circle number one, internal, getting clear within ourselves, healing ourselves, and healing each other to some degree. Which brings us to the second one, the inner circle. This can be family and friends. We might call it the family circle, although it can incorporate more than that. And when we talk about healing of old wounds, one way to look at it is through 12-step programs. This has helped, as I think I mentioned last week, as one small piece of my talk. 12-step persons have helped millions of people. 12-step programs have helped millions of people. And by extension, millions more. Families, children, all those things. So one of the two steps, the eighth and ninth steps in AA, for example, or many 12-step programs, are these. Made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. And then step number nine, made direct amends to such people, except when to do so would injure them or others. So we get clear, we make the list, and then we actually go out and do the amends. This might be, people talk about it, might be an amends to ourselves. We have to forgive ourselves as well as others to move on in life. That's part of that sort of wound clearing. It overlaps. And there are other, that's sort of a practical way, and I want to say that there are very deeply spiritual ways to also make amends and to mend that inner circle. I know a person, a woman who went to an African ancestral clearing workshop. Now that might sound kind of, what is that to you, you ears? But it was with a man named Brother Ishmael Tete, an African native. He's an author and speaks all over the world, but he's also a shaman in his native tradition, a medicine man, if you will, a healer and spiritual teacher. And she heard about this program in Los Angeles. He was coming to town, and it was ancestral clearing. And what that is the idea of mending, calling in the ancestors, the energies of our ancestors, to clear and mend long-standing family rifts. And that might, again, sound a little woo-woo to some people, but I want to point out that Dr. Edwin Friedman, building on the work of psychologist Murray Bowen, wrote a book called Generation to Generation, which talks about family systems theory and how an event, something, a trauma, some sort of thing that happened 2-3 generations ago or longer can show up in a family system very clearly. And so that ancestral thinking is not just sort of old school, quote, primitive thinking or supernatural thinking. It's been shown very practically through therapeutic clinical practice to have deep effects on families and communities. This is just coming to me now. There's a woman who wrote a book called Post-Traumatic Slave Syndrome, I think. Was that it? She talked about how African Americans, because of the background of slavery in this country and the cruelty and degradation that went along with that, still had these psychic wounds that pass through generations. And she's calling on communities to look honestly at this and to do that deep healing work that can break those patterns, just like I'm talking about. So this woman went to this workshop with Brother Tete, and they did rituals to call in the ancestors to heal these deep rifts of family generational. She went there with a specific idea to heal a decades-long rift with her sister. Her sister was 3 years older and had been sort of cruel and jealous, you know, kind of the evil stepsister archetype, even though they were blood throughout. And of course, it takes two to tango, and she knew that, but still, she wanted to work with this. And so she went to this workshop, and they did these rituals. And unbeknownst to her, at the same time, her sister across the country in Texas was having lunch with a friend and colleague. Now, this lunch would not have happened the way it happened, because both spouses were supposed to show up with them, but both spouses had other things come up. So it was just the two of these people, my friend's sister and that friend. And out of the blue, they knew some of the history, but her friend asked the sister, So what's happening with your sister, meaning my friend? And she said, well, she's been sending me, she's been kind of doing these sort of peace offerings and to me across, and she sent me a picture, family photo of years ago that she found, and I really haven't done anything with it. You know, and her friend said, come on. She's been sending you this, she's been calling you, leaving you messages, and you're not doing anything about this? Really? She called her out. And kind of surprised the woman, but she thought about it. And the next day, so again, my friend had done this ancestral healing workshop at the same time, 1,000 miles away, her sister is having this conversation. Her sister calls her the next day, teary, remorseful, asking forgiveness, saying how wrong she's been to be distant all this time, and the things that she's done and the things that she said. And while they're not the best of sister friends now, they are sisters again. And they're working on together on their mom's house in the Midwest, who's almost 90 years old, and doing the things that need to be done together instead of it falling to the one person, the one sister who was trying to keep it together. Not an easy job. So mending the second circle, the family circle, is hugely important, and it's also real possible in many different ways. You can go directly and make an amend, or you can go to a workshop, and it sounds like, well, that's what's that going to do? But look what happened. Now, can we make a causal relationship and say for sure that happened because of that? No. Can't prove it through the scientific method directly, but we're not talking about the scientific method. We're talking about the spiritual method. We're talking about the trans-rational, if you prefer, method. There are connections in the world that I submit that we do not fully understand. But when we step into the possibility of these things and open ourselves, sometimes really real miracles can occur. So that's two. And I want to move from that into, one little thing. We're going to move from the family circle into the communal circle. And I want to tell you something for that about Brother Tete. Brother Tete is about 65 years old. He has 5 biological children that are grown. And he has some other children back in Africa that he and his wife have adopted, who have been orphaned by civil war or other violence in their country or surrounding countries. I think that number is up to 67 children that he now has adopted in his community. And when he comes home, my friend told me this story, when he comes home, he's got an open Land Rover or something that he rides in on from the airport. And it's like a movie scene. All these children, 67 children come running down the road. Dad's home. It's like a big celebration in the community. And what a way to take your inner work and go to the family level and then go to the communal level. Right, so mending the sacred circle on many levels is Brother Tete's reason for being, and he's doing it well. So how can we maybe start to think about taking our internal healing and mending, our family mending, and then moving it into the community? Well, one way we do that is perhaps individually, but we also do it collectively. For example, each year, in the U.S., the second Monday in October, tomorrow, is what? Columbus Day, right? So, yes, we're getting to that, you bet. In 1998, the California Assembly also declared Native American Day as a response to that one-sided Eurocentric narrative of Columbus discovering America, right? And so it's important that's a healing. It's not everything by any means, but it's a level of healing and acknowledgement on a communal level, mending that sacred circle. And then in 1989, so actually prior to California, the South Dakota legislature unanimously passed legislation proclaiming 1990 as the year of reconciliation between Native Americans and white persons. And they also voted to change Columbus Day to Native American Day. Not just add it, change it. So since then, the second Monday in October, tomorrow, has been celebrated as Native American Day in South Dakota, which is the only state to not observe Columbus Day officially. And these are important as symbols, but there's a long way to go to create justice for indigenous peoples. And So I want to take this communal healing to one more step and tell you about something called the LEAP Manifesto. The LEAP Manifesto was created prior to 2016 leap year in Canada, but under the auspices of Canadian author and journalist Naomi Klein, who some of you may have heard about. She's written several books. Her latest, I think, is called No Is Not Enough, and it's about not just resisting any regressive political policies we might be experiencing, but it's about envisioning what we do want, not just saying what we don't want. So the LEAP Manifesto was a piece of that. And I want to read you a passage because I think it's important, because the bottom line that they take is that in order to heal the economy and the environment, we have to transition quickly to a clean energy economy, the clean energy economy, because fossil fuels are doing so much damage on so many levels. So here, this was not written by her, but by a consortium of activists and thinkers. So here's a piece. We could live in a country, applies to Canada, by the way. People can extrapolate it, but they were focused on their native land. We could live in a country powered entirely by renewable energy, woven together by accessible public transit, in which the jobs and opportunities of this transition are designed to systematically eliminate racial and gender inequality. Caring for one another and caring for the planet could be the economy's fastest growing sectors. Many more people could have higher wage jobs with fewer work hours, leaving time to enjoy our loved ones and flourish in our communities. We know that the time for this great transition is short. Climate scientists have told us that this is the decade to take decisive action to prevent catastrophic global warming. That means small steps will no longer get us where we need to go. So we need to leap. This leap must begin by respecting the inherent rights and title of the original caretakers of this land. Indigenous communities have been at the forefront of protecting rivers, coasts, forests, and lands from out-of-control industrial activity. We can bolster this role and resist and reset our relationship by fully implementing the United Nations Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples. So notice that the call for a leap like this, which affects all of us, ties in mending our relationship to the planet with mending relationships with native peoples, and by extension, with the wisdom that those traditions carry. Again, we have a long way to go to actualize these things, but I'm proud of Unitarian Universalism's explicit recognition of these things. Our seventh principle, respect for the interdependent web of all existence, ties in directly with a principle you might know from some native traditions, the seventh generation. Is what we're doing now healthy for the seventh generation out? Do our corporations think this way? Not even close, right? And so as we said in our sixth source, it specifically acknowledges this. Spiritual teachings of Earth-centered traditions which celebrate the sacred circle of life and instruct us to live in harmony with the rhythms of nature. Western culture has strayed so far from this harmony and this ethic and this care of future generations. And now is the time to restore it. Now is the time to leap. Again, quickly from the LEAP Manifesto, there is no longer any excuse for building new infrastructure that locks us into increased extraction decades into the future. The new iron law of energy development must be, if you wouldn't want it in your own backyard, it doesn't belong in anyone's backyard. And since there is a backyard everywhere, that means it belongs nowhere. Now, there's an irony here. Remember, South Dakota said, we're not recognizing Columbus Day. We're going to recognize Native American Day instead. But of course, if you look back at last year's Standing Rock protests, the industrial forces had no problem pulling in state power to say those protectors, often and primarily Native peoples again, sorry, out you go by force. So again, we have a long way to go. So Unitarian Universalism has a lot to say about mending that circle and saying, we're not just about words, we got to put it in action here, right? Finally, this brings us to and segues into the fourth concentric circle, from internal to inner to communal to planetary. Last spring and in our newsletter, we talked about creating an environmentally sound, socially just, spiritual fulfilling world. And as part of my personal commitment to actualizing this, I attended a conference 2 weeks ago up in Sacramento put on by something called the Shift Network. If you don't know the Shift Network, you might Google it. Very interesting group doing interesting work about sacred activism, about bringing consciousness and these wider circles of awareness into our work, into the world, into politics, into many things. And it included a climate change panel that was sobering, to say the least. That had a state senator on it, a member of the California Public Utilities Commission, and also the executive director of what's called the Large Scale Solar Association, people who are trying to build and replace fossil fuel infrastructure with large scale renewables. And she went on a tour with scientists, a world climate tour, climate change tour. And one of the places she went to in Antarctica, and she told a very heartrending story about going with a couple of scientists. They were going to measure the thickness of the ice in a certain shelf of the Antarctic area. And they went there, and there was no ice to measure already. There was no ice, and the scientists were shocked and disheartened. So this is all real stuff, and it's happening now, and it's happening fast. I want to turn you on to a film. There's more than one film, but one that I saw that was made in 2012 called Chasing Ice. A National Geographic photographer went around and put time-lapse cameras all sorts of places in glacier areas and stuff. And what he recorded was very astounding and troubling and heart-grabbing, and I encourage you to look at it to understand viscerally and visually what's happening. Again, that's called Chasing Ice. You can probably find it in many places. Paul Hawken, we're getting to the end here. Paul Hawken has written a new book called Drawdown, which outlines the 80 most important things we can do to reverse this trend. He has an interview in 1 hour, if you can't read the whole book, an interview with a guy named Terrence McNally, who's a speaker and teacher. You can find it on Terrence McNally's podcast. The website is called aworldthatjustmightwork.com. Which is easy to remember, aworldthatjustmightwork.com. This Terrence McNally's on KPFK, Barbara says. And that's right, I think he has a show, in fact. But Paul Hawken's new book is discussed there, and so really important. And so finally, I want to just say that these levels, internal, inner, communal, and planetary, all tie together. And that the work is ongoing. Stitch by stitch goes the mending. Step by step goes the progress. And it's important to know that when we do that, Marshall McLuhan said that, who also, the Canadian media scholar and thinker, who also coined the term global village, said, there are no passengers on spaceship Earth. We are all crew. There are no passengers on spaceship Earth. We are all crew. And if the crew has ever been needed to be all hands on deck, it is now. So deliberate for yourself. Don't just leave this as words. Take a moment. We're not going to take time now, getting a little late, but take a moment to deliberate. If I think of my inner circle, my internal circle, myself, my inner family-ish circle, my communal circle, or my planetary circle, what's one thing that I can decide and declare? Deliberate, decide, and remember, a decision isn't a decision unless there's action attached to it. Otherwise, it's just a theory. Deliberate, decide what you're going to do, and declare it to at least one other person. Could be your spouse or partner, whoever. Declare it. Put it out there in the world. Say, I'm going to do something. I'm going to do this to help mend these sacred circles, or one of them anyway. And I want to close by saying that part of sacred circles is art. That through, as I said, that film or whatever, it's not just about words and analysis. We come into our sacred circles through music, through poetry. Back in our reading, it said, Greek amphoras for wine and oil, Hopi vases that held corn are put in museums, but you know they were made to be used. The pitcher cries for water to carry, and a person for work that is real.